Ladies and gentlemen.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, one of the books! That means two to go. Second hour of the show right now in the Press Box, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM, as we're just rolling through a Monday. So much to get to. So many things to talk about. As we talked about the Atlanta-Milwaukee series, now 2-1 Bucks. And Nick alluded to the fact that the Suns took control, I believe, of the other series. Not only because they're up 3-1, going back to Phoenix tonight, but because Kawhi Leonard has already been listed as out yet again. And now they're at least giving us a medical update that it is a sprained knee.
Did they say anything about surgery?
They have not mentioned surgery. They have not mentioned tears. They have not mentioned the severity.
I thought for sure it was going to be, oh, it is a tear. This is how bad the tear is, and this is the surgery. That's what I thought it was going to be.
Whoever the source was that says he's done for the playoffs saw that report and said, I stand by what I said. He won't play the rest of the playoffs, and hinted at the fact that he will need surgery of some point. Not that it's ACL surgery. Maybe it's meniscus. Whatever the case may be. And he's still sitting in the damn suite, which is annoying as hell.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that. And I would assume that he would be with this team. But, I mean, I guess he can do that. I mean, I don't want to sit there and nitpick certain things that, because then the media gets accused of blowing things out of proportion. But and traditionally, even if you're a star player, you're suited up. If you're hurt or injured or not playing, you're suited up and down there with your team. Maybe some words of encouragement, considering you're the best player on the squad. Maybe
you know what I told you last week. If you're as good as he is, you know the game, and maybe you see something from the sideline a coach didn't see, and you can go to him and say, "Hey," especially if it's a guy filling in for him, saying, "Hey, when they do this, you do that, or if you do this, you'll have an advantage." But there are things you could pick up and communicate. You may be able to pick him up in a suite. Yeah. You can't communicate him.
Yeah, you can't. You can't. And that's why I don't understand why he's sitting there. And I would imagine it's a decision made by him, and the coaches or the front office don't want to mess with him and do anything about it. I bet you he just walked up to the game one day and said, you know what? I'm going to be sitting there in the suites. Unless this is something he's done normally. Does he do this? I mean, like when it's load management days, is he coming up to the game and up there in the suite? Like, I don't know what he normally does. I would assume he doesn't do that.
Yeah, I would assume that if it's just like a one game here or there. But again, at home games, guys have the ability to, and they're allowed to watch from the locker room if they want. They don't have to go out on the bench. As I've alluded to many times, he's so introverted and such a quiet guy that even when negotiations and stuff, his uncle does more talking than he does. He's just not one of those guys that wants to be in the spotlight or the limelight. But I think he's doing his teammates an injustice by not being on the
side. But you're not in the spotlight or the limelight when you're sitting on the floor. You have no media obligations. You don't have to talk to anybody. All you're doing is talking to your teammates. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have to deal with fans. I mean, you might have to deal with the heckler, but that's any normal day. But
you're at home, too, so you don't expect that.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, I don't understand. I don't get it either. I mean, I think you should be down there with the team. You know, anybody that wants to potentially grow, like, he should be helping them. But maybe he's just not that guy. Maybe he's not a good coach. Maybe that's a part of the...
So you want to talk about the fact that you really think the Suns are a better team without Chris Paul because he hasn't been able to perform at a higher level?
I did not say that, but they played like crap.
Boy, both teams did. It may have set basketball back, especially when the NBA is so worried about their product in the playoffs, and we've already talked about how many guys got... superstar players were injured throughout the playoffs. Trae Young doesn't count because it was during a game stepping on a foot. It's the other guys from the wear and the tear and the hamstrings and all those other things. But at the same time, you watch it, and everybody was trying to credit the Suns' defense. Well, the Clippers played defense too. Guess what? Neither team could put it in the ocean from the beach. They were awful. They were missing shots left and right. I told you that the Clippers missed 12 straight shots with a chance to take the lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I saw some more bad shot selection, too. I mean, just bad decisions in terms of taking the shot. Had no business. Typical bad fadeaways, hand-in-your-face type of stuff. I'm like, why are you taking that shot with that many seconds left in the shot clock? That aggravates me the most in anything when I see that in playoff basketball. You've literally shaved 2 or 3 seconds off the 24-second shot clock, and there's 21 seconds left, and you shoot this horrendous-ass shot from three-point land. That's dumb. Your point guard didn't push the ball across the half-court line that fast for you to just jump up and take a dumb shot like that. And I don't understand stuff like that. And look, there's going to be some bad decision shots in any playoff game, but there was a lot of that in that particular game. But
you know what really annoys me, Nick, is when you know you're going through a stretch like that and you get an offensive rebound, and instead of just going, okay, let's reset it, let's calm down, let's run something.
Go right back up with
it. And the minute they get it, yeah, it's either kick out for a three rushed up real quick, or the guy who gets it tries to like dribble into two different guys and throw it back up there. It's like, you don't have to do all that.
No, particularly where you get the rebound from. Like if you're in the paint and you're close to the rim, sometimes it does make sense for you to go back up strong, maybe get the foul, maybe try to get the dunk or the layup, and then get someone to foul you. Maybe you earn your free throws at the free throw line as long as your name is not Giannis. But sometimes it doesn't make sense. Sometimes it makes sense to just kick it back out to that point guard, reset the offense, and hope.
And your point is valid, because in most times when you have a guy, superstar or otherwise, that's struggling, the first thing they say is get a layup or get to the foul line. And a lot of times that can kind of click. Something can click for you to where you can feel comfortable shooting your shot again. But they weren't doing any of that. And it was just back and forth, miss shot. You're like watching a bad tennis match going, will it ever end? Is anybody going to ever score? It's terrible.
Yeah, it's bad. And even Clint, like, see, that's something Clint Capella actually does with the Hawks, is you'll see like a portion of his points sometime come from him getting that rebound really close to the basket and going back up strong.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that works for his case, for his cause, but doesn't necessarily work. I'm expecting a much, much better game from the Suns. But you know what?
I think it's over.
3-1. I agree. Do you think it's over tonight?
I do.
Oh, you think they're going 4-1, huh?
I think it's done. I just think the Clippers shot their shot. They gave it all they had.
You didn't have Kawhi. You kind of have an excuse.
Yeah, and now he's not coming back. And Marcus Morris is still dinged up. And I don't understand the fashion show that is Serge Ibaka. That would be a whole lot more valuable if he could put some minutes together on the floor. So I think that the Clippers gave it all that they could. But if this game was in L.A. tonight, I'd give the Clippers a chance. But I really believe it's over.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to come out with a little bit more intensity, I think, naturally. I really do.
And Paul will be even more comfortable. You know, Paul was, I think, stretches in that late third, early fourth, he was forcing it. Like, he knew Booker wasn't on, so he felt like he had to be. And Chris Paul, at his age, as good as he is not the guy that can carry the team by getting his own possession after possession. And he was gassed, and he took a lot of tough shots, and he wasn't making them either. So I think they get the home crowd. They get to feeling like, hey, we put them away tonight, and we can rest for a while. And it's also part of me that says, Nick, because you know I've already been crapped all over the fact that I don't think the Bucks they're in a good position. I don't think they're a very good team the way they play and the way they're coached. But I can honestly say to you, if Kawhi was healthy, I think the Clippers would be the best team left in the playoffs, and I would give the Clippers a chance to win it all, because I don't believe in any of the other teams. It's one of those fluke years where right place, right time.
I agree. I mean, I don't like to say asterisk. If you won a championship, you won the championship fair and square. I know the Lakers got bounced pretty early, and they got bounced with the issues that they had with Anthony Davis. So a lot of people are making the argument that perhaps they got a little bit lucky in that regard. And I can hear that argument, because from talent-wise, the Suns versus the Lakers, you can make the argument for sure that the Lakers were more talented. But yeah, it is kind of a fluke year. LeBron kind of voiced his complaints like not too long after getting bounced. He's like, I told the NBA coming back so quick would cause a lot of injuries and blah, 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 blah. I mean, I don't know if that's the case, but now you got a full offseason this time, and hopefully the next year is not.
Well, you know what I would almost wager? I'm not the gambling guy that others are on our station, but I would almost wager that of the four teams left in the playoffs, none of them will be in the conference finals next year.
I can see that. Suns.
I don't think. You know, Brooklyn's going to be there. The Lakers are going to be there. You have the Warriors could be there because they're going to be better. Everybody, you know, the Jazz bowed out early, but they always have a good team, good record.
There's a good chance that, I mean, if, like I said, if there's any truth to that report regarding Chris Paul, he may not be a Sun next year.
And he might be a Laker, right. So that would change things even more so. Philly's going to hopefully, with Daryl's tutelage, whether they do something with Ben Simmons or not, they're trying to get better. I just look at these teams going, I can't be mad at them because you played the schedule out the way it's supposed to be played and you're in a good position. But a year from now, I don't think that I expect any of these four teams to have a chance to win at all.
It's very possible. Unless the health bug comes over and then you start seeing situations like that. But I do think there is some truth, as much as, you know, LeBron is kind of deemed a complainer. I think there is some truth to what he's saying. That turnaround was quick. There is a routine that these NBA players have, and it's kind of hard for them to kind of bounce out of it and just do the exact same thing that they were performance-wise on the court. So
Lakers are looking at three different point guards that are all-stars. And in no specific order, they are going to go after Chris Paul, because he may choose them if he opts out in Phoenix. Dame Lillard, because he's not too jazzed about a whole lot that's going on in Portland right now. And Russell Westbrook, who is an L.A. guy, would love to play for the Lakers, and knows the Wizards aren't going anywhere. So depending on what they do with Schroeder and what they're going to do in the offseason, there's options to where LeBron knows time is ticking and I'm chasing Mike in those six chips.
Right. I mean, that's probably where a lot of that anger stemmed from. The fact that this is his second year. He wanted to get every single championship that he could while he's still young. Yeah. Or not young, but, you know.
And The Athletic and John Hollinger reporting now, as we talked about, and we'll get into a little bit, the Rockets and what they might do with number two. There's a widespread expectation that the Warriors will use their number seven pick in this year's draft and last year's lottery pick, James Wiseman, to immediately upgrade their roster to help out Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson in the bunch. One name to watch, they're saying, Pascal Siakam. If you add Pascal Siakam and his experience and his talent to the other three and they stay healthy, that's another reason why the Phoenix Suns then go down a notch.
Yeah, I think they do really good about finding talent. Like, I mean, there was times where I felt like it was unfair, but it really, they just do a good job of managing their team. I mean, particularly going back to the draft of when they got all those guys, I think that really happens. And it's a good move considering Klay Thompson. Chances are he'll be okay, knock on wood, but the reality is, like, you don't know if he's going to be the same player. The benefit that you get from Klay Thompson is that he's kind of a shooter. He doesn't really create for himself all the time, so he's kind of off the ball when you give it to him and then he shoots. So that's a good thing in that regard, but Siakam would do, man, that's great if they
well,
can get
it. And here's the other thing, Nick, when you think about it, compliment the Warriors if they were able to make the trade. Also compliment Masai Ujiri and the Raptors, because if they would end up with their own pick at four, the Warriors at seven, and last year's lottery pick of the Warriors and a really good seven-footer in Wiseman, you basically on the fly reconstructed a really good young nucleus for the Raptors, and it's a tough place to get people to want to go play in Canada. So he gets credit, too.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting trade to keep an eye on. What will the Rockets do it to? That's something we're going to get into. And so much more as we continue to go forward. We'd love to hear from you. 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text, hit us up on Twitch or on Twitter. It's Nick and Joel separately. Together with the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN. 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hour number two, three-hour program. Call it the Press Box on ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. Starting off a week the right way on a Monday. You guys with us with you, as we tear you till 4 o'clock, and then the Blitz takes over. So we were talking about the other teams in the NBA. The interesting thing now is that more and more stories are coming out that the Rockets may entertain a trade of the number two pick, which I said would be an absolute huge mistake. Nick and I have talked at length about the fact that as much as Rafael Stone, much like O'Shea, the GM at Portland, would like to tell you that it wasn't his fault, and you know, when they lose, and it wasn't about the roster he constructed, blaming it on Terry Stotts. And the way Stone said, don't grade me on the Harden trade till 2030. And you know, and GMs these days, when they make picks, it's basically luck. And sometimes you get it right and get it wrong, but you shouldn't be punished for that. And he keeps setting up all these little mental messages to try and say, I should be here a long time. And I said, and I think Nick agreed with me, he's on a very short leash. And if he screws this draft up, it is quite possible that he could be, whether it be scapegoat or otherwise, he could be on his way out real quick. And I even made mention of the fact that if a few things happen in the NBA, particularly if Danny Ainge is really pursued by the Jazz, that the dominoes that would fall would allow the Rockets to get an experienced and solid general manager basketball guy like Dennis Lindsay, and Stone would be forgotten about very quickly. So he has to do this draft well, and this offseason is hyper important to not only just him, but to the franchise. But the key, Nick, that you and I spoke about was if he pulls the Bill O'Brien, if he's more worried about keeping his job than what's the best move for this franchise, he may trade the pick or pick the guy that he thinks gives him the best chance to win sooner rather than later and look past the fact that some of these kids and a guy that everybody's looking at in green and saying he may take a few more years to develop, but once he matures, he could be all world. I think that it's a lot of things are going to really kind of sort themselves out in the wash this offseason, and it's going to be in particular if Rafael Stone can keep his job.
Well, I mean, we were talking about trading up that number two pick before. I think we both said no, right? I said no, too. You said no as well. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to those that, hey, trade it, because that's the only way you can cut this time in half or at least shave off some times in terms of the rebuilding process? What do you say to that? Because a lot of people feel like you should trade it away, right?
I don't think anybody that's of sound mind and confident basketball abilities think that the right move is to trade it away. Now, it always is contingent on what are you getting in return. Like, if you could trade it away and legitimately get a really good player, and I know that when we had Kelly Eco on the beat writer for the Rockets for the Athletic, he had indicated there was a rumor out there that the Rockets could trade one of their picks along with Wall and Gordon and take on the contract and the non-shooting abilities of Ben Simmons. I think that it's going to be interesting to watch a lot of different scenarios. I think based on what happens in Portland, if Dame really wants out, is CJ McCollum going to want to stay? Does he want to be the guy that becomes the main guy? Or is he also going to say, hey, I'm not in for the rebuild. I want to play where I can win, and I want to go somewhere else. And then you start weighing what's it going to take to get him. And if teams that aren't the Rockets that are okay with a longer rebuild are interested in taking on and absorbing an Eric Gordon or a John Wall, and in the process, you have to give up a pick two. But in the return game, you get a legitimate, younger, top quality, maybe not superstar, but top quality player. Then at least I would be listening. But other than that, there's no way. Because now there's rumors out there that the Pistons might be enamored with Green. And without doing anything or getting the number one pick, Cade Cunningham could slide to you at two.
Right. And look, I'm okay with the longer rebuild process. I've said this. I think I was talking to AJ on the Blitz when he asked me about it as well. But, you know, this is a team that's missed the playoffs for the first time in how many years? Rebuild. Take the time and do it right. But you do make an interesting – but it would play well for Rafael Stone if that's really the mentality and everybody's okay with it, because then that kind of gives him the leash to kind of stay there. But I'm okay with a longer rebuilding process. Some people are not. You know, if you're a hardcore fan, I feel like you're watching regardless. But I'm okay with a slow but proper rebuilding process. Now, maybe it does make sense to give up that number two as long as you're getting something in return. And there might be some interest if you can make a deal work. The other thing is, I always talk about unhappy NBA stars during the offseason. Maybe a team or two might have more assets 2 months from now that perhaps that they didn't have before. And now that discussion can actually make sense where you trade away the number two and get a lot in return. But as it stands right now, who's that team? I don't know. I don't know how much you can get in return right now.
And let me ask you this, Nick. Because we know that for a lot of teams, even in the prospects that we're talking about this year, there's no guarantees. There's no draft like LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, and Carmelo Anthony in the same draft in the top five picks. There's guys that are all based on potential, and you don't know if they're going to pan out or not. Is there a better guarantee waiting for one of these kids to develop? Or do you take a different path to a risk and say, Ben Simmons we already know he's an all-star. We already know that he can handle the ball, he can rebound, he can defend, he can do a lot of things right. I would rather take the risk developing a shot for him than take the risk on now needing one or two of these high school college kids to develop into something that I need, which a lot of it Ben already has. Now, he has the contract to go with it too, but in a good way, you have him locked down, and if it means you can also shed Eric Gordon and John Wall, there's so many wins there as this team rebuilds. I believe, and whether you see these videos on social media or not, I believe Ben Simmons is a good player. And I think that the way the videos are coming out with him playing pickup ball, and he's pulling the trigger and making threes, and of course, it can be edited. But I think that it's all, and there's a big difference between making it at the freaking Lifetime Fitness as opposed to making it in the NBA in the playoffs or any time in the NBA. So a lot has to still be worked on in the offseason. But I do think that the entire, it's a Daryl Morey trade too, so it's someone you know, whether that's good or bad. But if I'd consider being able to unload two more years of just hell with John Wall and Eric Gordon and getting a young talent 4 years under control, that you could say, I can work on his shot. John Lucas can work on his shot. We can get guys to get him. It might not be great, but Markelle Fultz did it. Lonzo Ball did it. I would believe Ben Simmons can do it too because he's athletic enough.
Is throwing in John Wall and Eric Gordon in the same package deal too good to be true and too much of an ass? Like, do you really think people want to take on both Eric Gordon and John Wall's contract? And if it's a situation like the Sixers, like you mentioned with Ben Simmons, and they're absolutely done, I think we know that Daryl Morey is a big fan of Eric Gordon, if I'm not mistaken. So my point is, like, do you really think teams are willing to take both of those guys at the same time? Or do you think it's a situation where you can trade away both of them away to do two different teams?
Here's the thing. If I'm Daryl Morey and I'm looking at this team, if I do nothing, if everybody saw what we saw in the playoffs and no one's interested in Ben Simmons, and I know that I've got Joel Embiid on a max with 1 year left. I know that I have Tobias Harris on a max. I know that I've got a lot of big contracts around them that I'm paying as well, and a lot of veteran players. Tell me how I can get much better than the run that I just made and go farther when I'm going up against Brooklyn, when I'm going up against Milwaukee, okay? Or I could say, I can take Ben Simmons off this team. I still keep everybody else. But I add a bona fide shooter and scorer and reliable free throw shooter in Eric Gordon. And I desperately need a point guard because Shake Milton ain't it.
And Gordon can do that too.
And John Wall can do that.
Correct.
And you can rest him during the regular season, but John Wall, as we've seen, can still be a blur from end line to end line. John Wall, when engaged and focused, can get the ball and distribute, and he can score. Is the Sixers team with John Wall and Eric Gordon better than a Sixers team standing pat with Ben Simmons? I tend to say yes.
Well, the other thing, and here's my question about John Wall. Do you think John Wall, regardless of the team that he goes to, is there a possibility at least that they're gonna be heavy on the load management because of his history and the fact that he has so much money left on his contract? That's my fear. So, yeah, we'll take John Wall. We'll take his bad contract, but we don't want him completely hurt to the point that in the event that we want to get rid of him or trade him, that no one's going to take him because he's out for another year and a half.
But he got whatever it was that he needed, Arthur Scott. He got it cleaned up, evidently his knee. And a lot of it, let's be honest, it wasn't that he needed surgery. It was the fact that he wasn't passing to the young guys. They wanted to see the young guys on the floor more. They knew if John Wall was going to be active, he was going to want to start and play and take away minutes from Porter Jr.
Sure.
And all the young players. So it was like best of both worlds in a bad situation. I think John Wall could have played the majority of the games this year. But if he's on a contending team where he's never hardly been before.
You think he plays?
I think he plays. And I think he plays a lot.
I think it's going to be interesting. We'll see my fear is these front offices are going to be afraid to play him because of the money they own. That's my fear.
But Nick, think about it. You owe Ben Simmons $4 and $146 million.
Yeah, it's a lot less, obviously. Yeah.
So you're $146 million on the hook regardless. If you could break that up and have only two more years of John Wall and two more years of Aaron Gordon.
It sounds a lot better.
Now you got two extra years to play with Embiid still in his prime. I'll take my chances with him, and then I'll go get other players without him, and it's going to be happening a lot quicker than having to try and resurrect Ben Simmons.
Yeah, so Charles Barkley and Shaq, they got into it again. I want to play that little audio clip as well.
That never happened.
And I guess we'll circle back to the Astros or whatever else you have on.
Hey, let's just keep going. We've got lots of things to get to. We've already gotten to a lot, and we love having you guys be a part of it. So let's keep on rolling. If you guys have something to throw on the table, bring it. We'll get it. And otherwise, we're going to keep doing it. It is Nick and Joel. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN. 97.5.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, back on the box. 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show starts now. Nick and myself till 4. AJ, Aaron, Fred, on the Blitz, taking you till 7. Someone said real quick on text, 713 said, would you trade 24, 27, and 2 or 3 future number ones to get Cunningham or Jalen Green, and you could get them both? It's not going to happen because, one, that's not enough, but as it is, if you could do that, but you can't because Daryl Morey traded away all your future ones. So it's really not even possible, but Detroit is not going to do that. And Detroit knows they already got a good young nucleus. Whoever they take, Green or Cunningham, they're going to have 4 or 5 young guys they're going to build around, and they're going to be solid. So, that's a pipe dream, but it's not a reality.
Yeah, I don't think so either, particularly Cunningham. I don't see how they can make that work. But, I mean, if they could, that'd be nice.
But there is a rumbling that they may like Green better than Cunningham, and then the Rockets have Cunningham fall right in their lap, and then they got a real tough decision. Because what I heard early on was, I think they said it on Sports Sunday last night on Randy McAvoy's show, was that Stone likes Mobley from SC, and that a lot of the other people in the front office are leaning Green.
From the Rockets front office.
Yeah, from a Rockets front office perspective. Which also is interesting because Suggs is not involved in the conversation. And I said, if you are really concerned about winning sooner rather than waiting it all out,
Suggs
would be the guy.
Yeah, I thought so too. We were talking about Suggs quite a bit. It's amazing how just a few weeks or even a month or two completely changes the discussion. Because we were all over Jalen Suggs. And look, there's some options, and you don't know who's going to evolve quicker than others, but that's going to be interesting for sure. Earlier in the show, we were talking about Chris Paul, Phoenix yep. Suns, the Clippers, that series. I think we've got Matt on the HRMP hotline. He wants to talk about it as well. Matt, you're on the press box. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. I'm actually on the I-10 about an hour south of Phoenix. I'm just driving back to Houston now. I'll see you guys on the Twitch. And the Suns have some great shooters. So I was thinking if you guys, if possible, for Ben Simmons get trades as they can move.
I couldn't hear anything.
He wants to see if Ben Simmons could get traded to the Suns. I mean, I think that the Suns are a complete non-interest in Ben Simmons unless the scenario that we painted for you a couple weeks ago happens. If Chris Paul realizes, I got all the money for my lifetime, for my kids, my wife, and maybe a couple generations, and the one thing I'm missing is a title if they somehow don't win it this year.
Ben Simmons becomes more enticing, at least.
Well, if he leaves, if he skips town and leaves, now you have a need to fill that role for the Suns. Could the Suns look at Ben Simmons? Yeah. I just don't know if that's a fit, especially because that's a team that relies on running, but they rely on so much, like he mentioned, there's so much shooting that at some point you're going to have to shoot too, because they're going to cover the shooters and put the onus on you to make plays. You're going to have, sooner or later, you're going to have to come out of your shell and actually shoot the basketball.
Yeah, and I don't know if they want Devin Booker running the ball. I mean, he totally can run the offense, but it's better if they lose Chris Paul, find a solid replacement for Chris Paul in terms of point guard. You still have Devin Booker playing off the ball. In the event that he's not shooting well, Ben Simmons can get you a basket if you're in a desperate situation in the paint. So I guess it could kind of work. It wouldn't be a bad situation for the Suns. But again, Chris Paul has to go. He has to go. He has to leave before having that discussion, unless he stays and somehow they add Ben Simmons, which I don't know if that's even possible, but I guess it could be. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if whether there is any truth to that particular report. I really want to know if he's going to pick up that option or not.
I think a lot is hanging on what happens the rest of the playoffs, Nick. If he gets a championship, then he has everything that he needs, and he can collect that money, run it back, and ride off into the sunset.
In another year,
you're a free agent anyway. And if you still got anything left and any desire to keep playing,
someone will sign you.
LeBron and those guys are still there. You still got your house in L.A. If they don't win it, and he's like, you know what? That was my best shot ever. My first chance ever in the finals. Can I get back there? And like we said, this is kind of an anomaly where all of a sudden everything fell right for the Suns this year. Do I believe that they're good enough to get back there next year? they're a good team. I don't think they're as good as the other teams in the West, depending on what happens and how things shake out. Golden State, the Lakers, Utah, several other teams. That's why I would say if Chris Paul falls short, I'm looking at the Lakers.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see if he actually wears a Laker uniform. That's going to be super, super cool to see. All right. Let's get into this Barkley. Yep. Shaq audio from last night, I believe.
They got lucky in game one that the Milwaukee Bucks had the worst defensive strategy in the history of civilization.
They still had the same strategy game two.
No, they didn't. They did not. They did not have the same strategy. You watched the game.
I watched the game. He was backing up.
He was not backing up. They were up on every pick and roll.
Okay.
No, they were up on every pick and roll. Then you watch. We showed it.
Jeremy, you know what? At halftime, I want you to show me this guy backing up.
This guy was not backing up. They were up on every pick and roll.
They just had 9 turnovers and he wasn't making shots.
Well, that's because they cleaned out all the lanes. Nope. He had no open lanes because they were doubling him on the pick and roll. That's why he was turning the ball over and shot the ball bad.
Not. He just had a bad game.
No, he had a bad game because of the defense change.
Stop it. First of all, you don't know nothing about no D. What the hell are you talking about?
I can see. I mean, you are an awful defensive player on the pick and roll. They were playing defense like you did.
I don't need to play defense.
You can't play defense like that.
I don't need to play
defense. No, you can't play defense like that in the modern NBA.
I don't know why anybody would even listen to you about defense.
No, I'm just telling you. I know I wasn't a great defender, but I was a better defender than you.
No, you wasn't.
You're the worst big man defender in the history of basketball, other than Brook Lopez in game one.
No, he wasn't. I'm fifth, dog. No, you better Google me again.
I will say, go ahead.
All right.
I'll let it go.
Kenny was like, just let it go. You got to let it go.
And they couldn't. And I like it. I don't like that Shaq takes it personal a lot.
He does.
But I don't think, I mean, of the two, honestly now, who do you say is a better defender?
Like between Shaq and Barkley?
Mm-hmm.
Barkley wasn't that great at defense. He wasn't terrible.
I'm going to say Shaq. Because guarding the guys he had to guard, he didn't have as much to do, worry about switches. Barkley's a better rebounder for his size.
He made a good point about defending the pick and roll, but it's going to be hard for a guy like that to defend the pick and roll anyway. He was just too big.
Yeah, all the basketball that I watched during that era, I mean, Shaq was as dominant a big man as the league has ever seen, short of Wilt Chamberlain. But did either guy overexert themselves on defense? No. But it becomes based on the position you play. Barkley playing the power forward. How did you defend the pick and roll? Were you able to, when switches happen high, were you able to stick with a smaller player? And obviously, he cleaned the glass better than most from a rebounding perspective.
Without a doubt.
Especially for a guy that was literally only 6'4". From a Shaq perspective, though, he didn't have to do all those things, yet he was a force that you didn't want to reckon with when you went into the lane, went to the basket, and so as a rim protector, that he gets credit there defensively. I think Shaq
is the better defender
than Barkley.
Well, I always talk about how Dwight Howard or like a Clint Capella or how bigs can impact the game just because of their presence in the paint, particularly just big guys. So I think Shaq's size alone, particularly later in his year, because he was without a doubt bigger later in his career than he was earlier coming out of college from LSU, that makes a big difference. Just knowing that you have to shoot over a guy that tall and that big, over 300 pounds, I mean, that changes your approach. Whether you're a penetrator who wants to score by attacking the basket with a layup, or if you're someone who just wants to stop and pop, it changes your dynamic. It changes your thought process when you attack the basket. So maybe that in itself kind of puts Shaq over the hump. But both of them weren't really that good at defending, in my opinion, at all. So, and I think they both acknowledge that. Well, maybe Charles does. Shaq, not so much.
Now, can I take this as something you mentioned? Because I'm interested in your take on this. Dwight Howard, we talked about in terms of where he was and where he used to be. Are you okay with Dwight Howard sitting courtside last night to watch the Bucks and the Hawks play, the team that beat your team? And the fact that you're not playing anymore? Because people were losing their mind. Like, you just got you're the Sixers. You just got eliminated by the Hawks. And now you're sitting courtside watching the team that beat you play in the Eastern Conference Finals. I personally didn't have a problem with it. He lives in Atlanta in the offseason. He's always lived in Atlanta. If he loves the game, if he wants to go watch the game and see what the playoffs are all about, I got no problem with that.
Especially, I didn't even know. If he lives in Atlanta? Yeah. Well, if he really lives in Atlanta, then why?
Maybe he's from Atlanta.
Maybe.
I mean, he and Josh Smith played AAU ball together on a team from Atlanta. So I think they're both from Atlanta.
Plus, I always talk about how he's just an absolute big kid. And if he just wants to have fun and go, believe me, Dwight's going to do it. He don't care.
He's taking selfies with fans on the way in and out of the tunnel. And so let him be. I don't have an issue with that.
I have more of an issue with the Kawhi thing. And I don't even know if I have that much of an issue, but I have more of an issue with Kawhi than that particular thing. Kawhi sitting up there in the suites during the playoff game. Your team is not even bounced yet. At least Dwight is in his offseason.
I got a problem with Kawhi not sitting on the bench. I really do. And I think that his players,
his teammates should be saying something. Yeah. Maybe the younger players don't have the, you know.
But if you're Pat Beverly vocal, you got enough veterans on that team, Marcus Morris vocal, they should be able to say, Paul George was able to undress everybody on the team last year after the season about them not doing their thing and we could do whatever we wanted our thing. And then other team players were saying how they didn't like how the Kawhi and PG got special treatment. They haven't had a problem voicing their opinions in the past. If you got a problem with Kawhi, tell him.
I think even Pat Beverly vocal won't be able to do it. The front office will be like, look, bro, we love you, Beverly. We love your defense or whatever. We love your heart and how you get underneath the opposing player's skin. But Kawhi is the team, buddy. If he wants to go, I mean, what is he going to do? Is he going to yell at the coach? Is the coach going to yell at him and say, hey, get your ass back down here from the suite and come back and sit next to the... Like, who's going to make him move? Like, nobody. Not the owner, not the general manager, not no president, not no head coach, no assistant coach, no trainer. If he really wants to be up there, he's not coming back down.
Are you pro Ty Lue or against Ty Lue? Because I don't see Ty Lue being the guy telling Kawhi he's got to sit on the sideline.
No, he's a player's coach. I don't think he's a bad coach, but some people do. I don't think he's terrible. I think he's a good coach, but he also ran into some luck with some certain players.
Certain teams.
As a coach, I mean.
Certain championship.
Yep. I mean.
One second to go in hour number two still means 3 hours on the show, which means 60 minutes after that to go. We are here with a whole lot more. It is Nick. It is Joel. It's Press Box. Let's go and see the stars, the Milky
Way, or even Mars. You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, wrapping up hour number 2, 3-hour program. Nick and myself on The Press Box. We appreciate you being boxers on ESPN 92.5 and 97.5 FM.
My bad on the commercials. Curtis.
Don't live.
Weirdest. It's him and Dick Willie that get really aggravated.
Queerdest and Q. I just call him Q because I don't know how to pronounce it. But yeah, Dick Willie.
By the way, did we get good news in regards to intern Tyler?
We did.
Remember intern Tyler who we interviewed here before?
Yes.
We were trying to get him a gig with an NFL team outside the Houston Texans, of course.
Yes. Tyler, Igbu, I think, is his last name.
I'm just going to call him Big Tyler.
But
I call him Big
Tyler as well. Great, great kid. And really fun to work with here. But I kept kind of ribbing him before shows. We talked leading up to Charlie getting off the air and us coming on. And I was like, bro, people should be calling you. I'm like, do I need to be your agent? Do you need to fire your agent and get me in there? Because camps are about ready to start. You need to be on a roster. You're too good for this. And he's like, man, I'm trying. I know everybody's trying, blah, blah. Well, he gave us good news today. He is heading off to the Canadian Football League. And I told him to do us proud. But he is going to the Canadian Football League. He said, hey, it's Tyler, the intern. Wanted to let you know, I think all your good juju the last couple weeks for me paid off. I'm heading to play for the Edmonton Elks. They're not the Eskimos anymore. Edmonton Elks in the CFL. I'm leaving this Friday. But I wanted to say thanks. I really enjoyed being at the station, talking sports with you before and after your show, and listening to you and Nick talk made my day super fun and easy to be there. We appreciate you. And, of course, as I told him, keep in touch with us. Remember us from back in the day and hopefully bigger and better things ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed like he had a good head on his shoulders. And, I mean, everybody would ask him over and over again about updates. Hey, would anybody call you? Anybody call you? He's like, no, I'm just working out, waiting for that right call. So at least he's there somewhere. Now he gets some reps, and maybe he can develop his game and get into the NFL. So shout out to Tyler. You did wonderful work here, and good luck.
No doubt. Hey, maybe when I was younger, I wasn't an Olympics guy. And maybe as much as I say I didn't even notice last year because of everything with the pandemic, and maybe it's because my wife and with her mom in town, they've always been big runners, and they love all the Olympic stuff. They love the gymnastics and the figure skating and the Winter Olympics and all that stuff. So they had it on the TV a lot. I had to like find other TVs for a lot of the sports I was watching this weekend. But I got roped into the track, and I got roped into the gymnastics, and I was telling you during the break, like, the track is pretty intense. But when you think about it, this is it. Like, these Olympic trials, you're either in or you got 4 years to think about it. And some of the track events, there's some pretty good-looking girls too, Nick.
I mean, it's the Olympics.
But there's a kid from LSU who, I think he was the two-time NCAA champion. He was only 19, and he was in the 200 hurdles. And, I mean, you're going up against some stiff competition as it is, so you've got to be on your game. He misses one of the hurdles and goes head over heels into a barrel roll.
Oh.
And at that point, even if you get up, you're like, you're screwed for the next 4 years. Thank God you're only 19, but even still, now you got to stay in great condition and do all your stuff and train and be ready, you know, when you're 23. Or they were doing like the 10,000 meter, like the 6 mile run. Right out of the gate, the chick's shoe falls off. And there's like 40 runners.
Oh, no.
And so now I'm not worried about who's in front. The whole time I'm like, where's the chick that fell, that got her shoe on?
Oh, she's probably crying.
And everybody's like, oh, she's got plenty of time to recover. Every time they showed the mask go by, there was the wagging tail of the dog at the very end. The last person, like, at one point, two cameras thought that all the runners had passed them, stepped out onto the track, and were like, whoops, oh, she's another one. And they had to get out of her way.
Oh, no. And this is all, God, the anticipation of 4 years, man, would be too much pressure for me. And then it just goes away like that? God.
Like, I had a pit in my stomach thinking the what if, and I know it's horrible to think, but I was like, what if after being the GOAT for the last several Olympics and national world championships and everything else, what if Simone Biles fell, and then she fell off the balance beam? And I'm like, let me go back and see how they picked this team. And they're like, well, there are two open selections that the committee can make. I'm like, well, thank God, because she's making it no matter what. Yeah. But again, as storied as her career, the last thing you want to see is before she even gets there, she falls or twists an ankle or something like that, and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. After 4 years is just way too much pressure and anticipation. And you're right. If you're 19, I guess you still have another chance, right? You know, you could probably come back in your early 20s and still be just as young and everything. But, man, that's just way too much pressure. No wonder they're doing that. No wonder steroids was an issue in the Olympics.
So, like, such Simone a big Biles moment, is now, dude, 24. She's saying this is her last one. Allyson Felix, one of the greatest female track stars of all time, who's got married with a kid now. She said, this is my last one.
Go
she
round.
Qualified. She's going. But this is it for her. And you think about, you're going one or the... The one woman that was an alternate on the 16 Olympic gymnastics team still was there and did all those things. She was trying to make a name for herself, and then she jumped out of bounds on the floor exercise, and it was like she had to sit there for an hour and some, like, just on pins and needles until she found out she was, like, one of the committee's picks.
I just happened to look at is it Leanne Wong that you're talking about possibly? I don't know.
No.
She was an alternate as well, I think. It was like a Maryland native, maybe.
No, I'll find it for you.
But yeah, I mean, that's just crazy to me. That's just an incredible amount of training, focus. And some of these athletes will go as far as, and this is the big thing for me, and not drink the years leading up to the Olympics. They not a drop of alcohol. They're just disciplined for 2, 3, 4 years. I'm like, I don't know if I can do that part. I'll train and work out, but now you're going to take alcohol away? No, I'm a pass.
I'm with you. That's
but that's,
you
know, why I would never.
So
make
what
it
do? You trade in sex for booze because they gave out 150,000 condoms. They say that when you're not competing in your events, when all these you know, finely tuned athletes, men and women, are all in the Olympic Village from all these other countries. It's like Vegas, right? What goes on in the Olympic Village stays in the Olympic Village.
Goes down,
but what
huh?
comes off in the Olympic Village is a whole lot of clothing, because it seems like when your event's over, that's when the party begins. And that's where I think the alcohol flows and the people still are having fun.
It's probably true. Like, who was that one swimmer? It wasn't Phelps, but it was the other guy, I guess, like, that was competing against them that wasn't as
Ryan
popular.
Lochte.
I think, and he was the one that had, like, a Tinder run while he was on the... While he was in that country, in Brazil?
Well, he was the one of like two or three swimmers that decided to go out a night out in the town after they were done swimming. And then they decided to rip down a poster in a gas station and cause they all got nailed. So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, and again, you're so focused on the sport. At what point do you turn it off? And then how can it not be a turn on when you're looking at the pole vaulter from Sweden or the, you know, the gymnast from so-and-so when your event's over and you're like, well, I'm still stuck here. I can't just go home.
Yeah. I mean, I could see some partying going down.
So I believe it was either Madison Kosian was one of the girls. It was Michaela Skinner. Michaela Skinner
was
an alternate last Olympics, and she finally made it this Olympics.
Okay.
And then the UT running backs coach's daughter made the team, I believe, with Houston or with Texas connections. And there's a girl whose first name is Jordan, who was named after Michael Jordan, who I like already because she has over 50 pairs of J's because she takes the name seriously.
Oh, that's nice. That's super cool.
All reasons to watch the Olympics, people. I'm just trying to help. All right, well, that's hour number two of the program. Still got an hour left to go on the show. Lots more to get to. If you guys want to join us, we're here for you. 713-780-3776. You can call, you can text, you can Twitch or tweet, and it's all good in the neighborhood. Before you go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for a long time. It's crazy. I was there Friday, and a guy recognized my voice, and he said, hey, thank you. And I said, for what? And he said, I listen to you guys all the time, but you guys recommended that I come here. And since I've been coming to Apollo Men's Health, I feel 10 times better. I've got more energy. And it's all because I heard you guys mention it on your show. And I said, well, I'm glad we could play a small part in helping you out. But it's not just him. It's everybody that could just do the simplest thing. You go to ApolloMH.com and you set up your first appointment. And you find out that once you come in and meet with Dr. O and his staff, they're going to take phenomenal care of you. And in the process of taking care of you, you're going to feel great. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, you can feel like you felt like in your 20s all over again. And they do it a million different ways. You want to get on a workout program, they'll do a full body composition analysis. You want to recover quicker, they got HGH peptide therapy. And they have hormone therapy for both men and women. They do it all right under their roof, and they have two locations to better serve you, both near downtown Houston. Go to ApolloMH.com, set up that first appointment. You'll find out that most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. You're going to get a free B12 shot on your first visit. They're good people doing great things. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.